Let's check in with Northwest Indiana financial advisor Greg Hammer. There may be some people that may actually get some money back, and I understand that that's not unusual, Greg. Tell us about that.
Yeah, a lot of folks use the process of withholdings through their paychecks to create a forced savings for themselves, and you know, sometimes they realize tax benefits or breaks that they didn't know they were going to receive, and so they end up with a refund that they weren't expecting. But a lot of people do utilize it as a way to accumulate a small windfall, to say the least.
Now, in light of that, I guess that there's some companies that are, I think, handing out some employee bonuses and things like that, making plans to increase wages and expand benefits. And, of course, that's in light of the increases that they probably gotten to see or the opportunities that they'll be able to see, at least, with the new tax reform.
Yep, absolutely. And a couple things I always like to mention with the new reform. They are expected for most people to receive, or I should say, pay less in taxes. But you know, a lot of them are changing the withholdings already. The government wants that money out in the economy today to stimulate it. So mm-hmm. people just need to be aware and make sure that the withholdings are being are not being adjusted more than what their tax savings are, so it doesn't impact their refund that they normally expect or how much they might owe at the end of the year.
Now, I understand that there are basically five ways that you have come up with to be able to help all of us maybe make the most out of our newfound cash overload, if you want to call it that here. Let's go first through the first one here, which is an important thing to have anyway, which is an emergency fund.
Yeah, and I always tell people there's a couple of things. If you use it, some people use it, like I said, as that forced savings, and they have a specific purpose for it. But if you don't, to your point, it's an excellent opportunity that, you know, if cash reserves have always been kind of tight because they get, you know, used up throughout the year, it's a great way to refund that emergency fund so that, you know, you can have that resource if something should come up. And a typical emergency fund should have 3 to 6 months' worth of living expenses.
When you take a look at that and you create this emergency fund, or at least to reinforce what if you might happen to have one already here, what kind of opportunities do you think that we'll be able to be able to make as far as savings is concerned if you would decide that you want to go that route?
So in terms of the actual emergency fund itself, there are some opportunities. Money markets have, you know, contributed to go up in terms of interest rates. So a lot of the short-term rates have climbed over the last several months. In terms of contributing to a retirement account, it's an excellent opportunity to look at not only traditional IRA deductions, but possibly look at Roth contributions with the new tax laws. It may be advantageous to consider a Roth versus a traditional, and they have upped the limits with the ongoing years as we go through. The 18 is now 18.5
yeah.
In 2018. The catch-up provision is still 5,500. I'm sorry, 1,000 for those 50 and over. So the additional dollars could be put to good use.
Okay, I was going to say that that's obviously an opportunity where if you have this chance to be able to improve on your retirement account, that's probably good because it's wise to have that anyway, I would imagine.
Yeah, and you know, it's one of the toughest things to do because there's not a lot of instant gratification in saving for retirement, but as you start to see the accounts grow and benefit from the time horizons, which I always tell people is probably the largest key in any sound plan, is making sure you have time on your side, and the sooner you get those funds in, the better the results, and you'll start to see your money grow and, you know, agree that it was smart getting that, mm-hmm. that started earlier.
We're talking with Northwest Indiana financial advisor Greg Hammer about the opportunities that one might have if you find yourself with an unexpected windfall and a tax refund from your returns this year. We've talked about being able to help beef up your emergency fund to be able to deal with those things that may happen in the future, as well as work on your retirement account. But also, too, I guess a good idea is to be able to pay off any of those high-interest debts. Maybe you should remind us what those high-interest debts might be.
Yeah, so I always encourage people, if you have credit cards, especially now with the interest rate environment, those variable rates are going to continue to climb. And it's hard to really look at saving money when you're leveraged at that high interest debt. And the sooner that you can throw extra towards the principal, the more impact your monthly payment that you have budgeted will have on decreasing that balance. So if you have that refund, throwing a little bit extra money towards that balance does help reduce the amount of interest costs. And again, my concern is with the rising interest rates, a lot of folks that were, you know, paying a certain amount per month, it may increase just from the fact that minimum payments will increase with the rising rates.
And one other point, too, that maybe we don't always keep in mind, too, is being able to help our child's education if we have youngsters that are still in school or about to go to college. It's something to plan for the future, and this is a good way to be able to put this little extra money that you get from your tax refund into that, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's one of the things that I'm always constantly thinking about with my kids growing up. It's, college costs have I would probably say, have had the largest increase from an inflationary standpoint than probably just about anything else you can consider. I mean, when I went to college, it's almost five times as much for the college I went to in terms of tuition expenses. Mm-hmm. And even a lot of the simple state programs are considerable costs when it comes to funding the kids' education. So being able to put some money aside and have that available for when those bills come due will make it easier not only on the parents financially, but lessen the amount of debt that the kids leave school with.
I know a lot of people are taking advantage of the 529 plans to be able to sock away some additional money for college. And I guess some even use it, I guess, for helping pay for some of the pre-college expenses, too, for education.
Yeah, they opened up expanded the use of the 529 plans in 2018. The Tax Cuts and Job Act now allows up to $10,000 in distributions to pay for kindergarten through 12 for any private school or education where there's tuition fees.
Now, finally, Greg, we've talked about all these things here of ways to save the opportunities of additional money that we might get from a tax refund. If we plan it out right, I guess you're supposed to be able to take advantage of the opportunity. I guess Uncle Sam encourages you to, as you mentioned before, to basically take a little change in your deductions from your paycheck so that you may have the money sooner.
Yeah, and, a lot of, like I said today, I think the biggest challenge with the first implementation of these new tax laws is there's two things changing, the actual tax obligation, and then by the sheer nature of the change of the tax brackets when people fill out their tax withholding forms way back when, and it's nothing they have to redo, but those adhere to the actual tax brackets. So you're going to see a change in a lot of cases in the actual withholdings that are being done in the check. And, sometimes people don't realize it because you get raises at the first of the year, there's adjustments in the health insurance cost when you enroll or re-enroll or have a new health care company come in. And so, at the end of the day, we just see a change in our net income, but we just feel it's from factors that are involved with all the other things that are going on that are being taken out of our paycheck. So just understanding those changes and being able to make sure there's no surprises, per se, mm-hmm. at the end of the year, I think gives people a little peace of mind and comfort.
I would imagine that probably you'll be making sure that you've adjusted things properly, knowing that when it's time to do your 2018 reform form for what you've gotten from this year, that obviously you're going to be able to be properly prepared for it. It won't be quite as much of a shock with it.
Well, that's exactly, and those are the words I use with a lot of the people that are coming and getting their taxes done. It's, I don't want the sticker shock. You're going to go and you're going to pay less taxes in most cases, not always. I've seen a couple people where their tax obligations have actually stayed flat or have gone up a little bit. But they anticipate that most people are going to save, and, when you're getting an extra $30, $40, $50 on a paycheck, it may not seem like a lot, but if both parents are working and you're getting paid four times a month, all of a sudden there's a couple $100 less going to the IRS, and if there's not the same type of savings, you end up on the wrong side of a tax return, and then instead of getting a refund, you could possibly owe.
Yeah, that's true. I imagine as you finish up here with this current tax return filing season, it's probably a sigh of relief now.
Oh yeah. It's been crazy, but that's part of the season. But we'll look forward to educating our clients. We'll be bringing a lot of them back in after tax season to talk a little bit about the new 2018 laws and the impact it's having.
So this way, as we mentioned before, this way it's not going to scare people when it's time to work on the new forms and all the changes they're going to see from that because of the tax reform plans to begin with. So we've been talking with Northwest Indiana financial advisor Greg Hammer. And as always, Greg, thanks for spending time with us. And we'll check back in again soon on another topic of interest and as far as one's finances are concerned.
Thanks, Chris.
It's time to talk water. Well, water infrastructure, that is. And the man we are talking to about that is one of the people who's worked so hard in the General Assembly over years and even up to as far as this past session of the General Assembly to deal with the issue of Indiana's aging water infrastructure. We're going to talk with State Senator Ed Charbonneau, who's a Republican from Valparaiso. Senator Charbonneau, thanks for joining us here on Regionally Speaking.
Chris, thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to chat with you.
Well, let's do a little primer first. It's been a while since people have really thought about this, unless they've had problems out there or they've complained about the lack of water in their neighborhood for some reason. Tell us overall about the major problem that the entire city of Indiana, and not just Northwest Indiana, faces with an aging infrastructure when it comes to water structure.
Yeah, Chris, and it isn't just Indiana. It's the entire country that is facing an infrastructure issue with regard to water. It's not unusual at all to find municipalities with pipes in the ground that are over 100 years old. Pipes in the ground that are wood, kinds of things that are kind of unbelievable to think about, but having a very significant effect on health issues and just delivery of water. An issue that, water is a scarce resource in many areas, and one of the issues you deal with when you talk about 100-year-old infrastructure is leaking pipes. And what we've found over the years is that 25% of the water that comes into the system and gets treated is lost because of those leaking pipes. So it's a big issue.
Yeah. I know going back even to 2017, you were able in the General Assembly to get some major legislation passed and signed by Governor Eric Holcomb. Tell us about the measure that they got through back in 2017, and then we'll look at what you had put into the hopper for this past legislative session.
Yeah, one of the big things was getting the Indiana Finance Authority to be the lead agency for the state of Indiana. And the key there, the Indiana Finance Authority deals with money and with federal money coming in, and they're able to multiply. When a small utility may have X number of dollars to invest in infrastructure, they can, with the use of federal funding, make that 3X or 4X, and a huge difference. And just a number of issues dealing with, again, with the infrastructure, with the IURC and control of rates for in distressed utilities. There are big issues with regard to the ability of utilities to, let's say, expand out into areas where a community, let's say Valparaiso, wants to grow, and how they can do that and how they can pay for that.
I also understand, too, last year in the measure that went through and was signed into law was also a way to help nearby states and other organizations involved in dealing with the issue if they hadn't addressed it already. I guess what it was referred to as a Transborder Water Resources Authority, and that sounds kind of confusing. What is that all about?
Well, yeah, that's an interesting one, Chris, because for many, many years, we're aware of the Great Lakes Compact that Indiana is a part of. And there was one representative in particular that was concerned about similar issues on the Ohio River, and thought that we should enter into a compact to deal with the Ohio River and any rivers and aquifers that join surrounding states.
Uh-huh.
And he had been after that for about 5 years, and finally we did pass that in 2017.
And
it's very similar in effect to the Great Lakes Compact,
right,
but for other bodies of water.
And I understand that you were a sponsor in that measure. It was a House bill basically that got turned into law, but you were at least on the Senate version. You were the sponsor there too. So okay.
Yes.
So we take a look at what happened in 2017 in the General Assembly session. Let's take a look at 2018. Tell us, if you will, at the bill that you had written and sponsored at the start of the session, Senate Bill 361. And I understand it would deal with what is being referred to as a Water Infrastructure Task Force.
Yes, we're now a good 6 years into dealing with water issues. And Chris, I mean, my approach from day one with this was that we were going to take a very steps that were very measured, mm-hmm. and each step along the way would be based upon data and facts. Water is a very contentious issue. It's a very emotional issue when you start dealing with farmers and irrigation and maybe somebody wanting to say, hey, you're doing too much irrigating. Those kinds of issues can blow up quickly. We didn't want to do anything like that. And I think one measure of our success is the fact that over the 6 years that we have been working on water issues, I think every bill has passed every vote unanimously in both the Senate and the House. So that speaks volumes for, I think, a lot of work that a lot of folks have been doing and the collaboration that's been going on with regard to dealing with the water. Yeah. And the infrastructure now is okay, we know we have an issue. We know we have pipes in the ground that need to be replaced. The last IFA study, and we've commissioned IFA studies over the last 3 years, revealed that we had been grossly underestimating the need or the cost of updating our infrastructure, water infrastructure. And currently it looks like it's about $2.3 billion for starters, and then $850 million a year for the next 20 years. And the issue becomes, who's going to pay for that? The main issue right now. And it's very significantly different from road infrastructure, because road infrastructure is state or, you know, it's government property you're going to spend government money on. That's not the case with water utilities. You have municipal utilities, you have private utilities, you have utilities are under the jurisdiction of the IURC. Utilities are not under the jurisdiction of the IURC. You've got private utilities. So how you fund that becomes a very intricate, very complicated scenario. Now, and that's what the task force is going to take a look at.
Now, I understand the bill that deals with this Water Infrastructure Task Force did not make it through this legislative session. Maybe you know why, and if you do, please let us know. But there was an accompanying House bill that you mentioned that did make it through. Tell us about the drama that involved your bill making it through and what this House bill is about.
Well, you know, part of it is always timing, but mm-hmm. Yes, there were two bills, the bill that I filed and one that Representative Soliday filed in the House. And the normal process, we hear a bill in the Senate or the House, wherever it's filed, and then it goes over to the other body for another look and deal with. Both bills passed out of their House of Origin. Mine passed out of the Senate. The other, that's House Bill 1267, passed out of the House. When my bill went to the House chairman of the committee said he didn't have time to hear the bill.
Yeah.
So it in effect died. The bill that came over from the House, I was the House or the Senate sponsor of, made the changes to it. I didn't put it back to my original bill, but looked for some kind of middle of the road compromise. Sent that back to the House, and that bill ultimately passed.
Yeah. So you got one out of the two, at least, and there is something that to have said from this session. Now, are you going to bring up another version, perhaps, or a repeat of Senate Bill 361 in the next session?
No, there won't be any need for that.
Okay, because the other bill takes care of it? Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. All right, so we're caught up here on what happened in the past in the legislature and this past session as well, too. And I understand, too, by the way, we're talking with State Senator Ed Charbonneau, a Republican from Valparaiso, about one of the major topics that he has dealt with for years in the legislature and the state and of the nation as well, is our aging water infrastructure. You had an opportunity, I know, not long ago to participate in a Great Lakes Policy Workshop that was entitled The State of Indiana's Water Infrastructure, a subject, of course, near and dear to your heart, certainly.
Yes.
We've just been talking about it, but tell us a little bit here about the people who participated in this workshop, along with yourself, and what all was discussed in that session.
Well, that was involvement from the again the surrounding states that surround the Great Lakes. A lot of common interest, and always our concern. We have a number of organizations that continue to work on Great Lakes issues, and I'm also on the executive committee of a Great Lakes legislative caucus that meets a couple times a year dealing with these issues.
Mm-hmm.
Water is a huge factor for economic development. It is a huge factor. It is one of the top, if not the top, issue that companies, when they're coming into a state, and we have that experience in Indiana, that they're interested in knowing, tell us about your water availability.
Yeah. Well, I recall even hearing radio commercials from other communities and other states talk about the availability of water. And in fact, one commercial I recall had the sound of gushing water in the background. That's the idea, to let somebody out there who might be looking for a place to locate a business, let them know that this community has plenty of water to deal with, which is interesting because we know in the Chicago area, water is very scarce and it's very expensive and it's fought over quite literally. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting that these things could come up like that, to be sure.
Yeah. I forget who it was. One time said, "Whiskey's for drinking, water's for fighting." And
that's turned out to be prophetically true, hasn't it? It seems like I know.
Okay.
Well, we're talking about water infrastructure and the problems, of course, with aging pipes and the mains and the like here, causing a lot of the problems with leakage. I know another problem too, that which is sad to say, is dealing with contamination, and part of that is, I know, with aging pipes. In this case, we're talking about lead contamination, and this led up, I guess, to a recent decision from Indiana American Water Company, which is one of Indiana's largest water utilities, if not the largest in the state, coming up with a plan that I know they have put up before state and federal regulators to deal with this problem.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us, if you're aware of what this is all about, and what do you think of it?
Yeah, and I want to commend Indiana American Water for what they're doing. They're taking an issue that is in many respects complicated because. Chris, what you have I talked earlier about the fact that you have different types of utilities and the same with the infrastructure. The Indian American owns their infrastructure up to the point where it comes off the main and heads into an individual's house.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, the individual is responsible for that. And you get into an area like we're involved in East Chicago, it becomes a real problem for individual homeowners to be able to pay to replace those pipes. So, and again, through some of the legislation that we did over the last couple of sessions, Indiana American now has the ability to go in and help replace those pipes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a huge health issue and a tremendous asset to have a utility that's willing to do that and then spread that cost out over all of their ratepayers. Yep. And that becomes an issue, of course. And, you know, me, if I live someplace 50 miles away, why am I paying for somebody in East Chicago's pipes, replacing their lead pipes? But it's the right thing to do.
Yeah.
And hopefully the Indiana American has to go through there under the jurisdiction of the Indiana Utility Regulatory Commission, so they have to get permission to do right. that. And that's the process that's going on right now.
In fact, I was wondering if it had gone through the IURC yet. The latest information I had that it was still under consideration by the commission.
Yes.
So the plan itself has not been approved as yet, and then they'll have to come back in again, of course, later, and it'll be a standard rate case then in how to deal with the costs that are going to come about with this plan, I would imagine.
Well, I think that what they're going through right now with the IURC is the rate case.
Uh-huh. So that's basically they have the plan, and apparently the IURC has signed off on the plan in basic terms. They just have to deal with the cost that the ratepayers are going to have, the customers actually are going to have to pay for the cost mm-hmm. of having those lines replaced.
Yeah, and again, the value of that, Chris, is that we're talking about ratepayers all over the state of Indiana mm-hmm. that are come under the Indiana American.
I wonder now too if this goes through and this plan is enacted fully and people are able to see the results of what Indiana American Water Company is doing here in the system. I wonder if we'll have other municipal water companies come across either similar plans or something very similar and have to come up for review by the customers at the very least, or maybe the regulators too.
You bring up another very interesting and kind of a twist to all of this. Chris, because most municipalities are not under the jurisdiction of the IURC.
Right.
Most municipalities can do this on their own. It's a matter of who's going to pay for it.
Yeah, I suppose it comes down to political will, I suppose, in this case, because then you have to talk to your customers, who basically are also the voters in the particular
yes.
community too. It's all part and parcel of the process that you go through. It's no different than going up for re-election at the elections, such as the one coming up here in
yes.
Indiana, to be sure. So, well, this is a great way to close it out, I hope, Senator Charbonneau. Thank you very much for spending time with us today to talk about the issue of water, of aging water infrastructure, and how we've kind of gotten to where we are today, that there'll be more projects to work on, and I'm sure there'll be more things that will, I'm sure, in some way or another, come up again in the next legislative sessions, the ones in the future as well, too, to try and figure out ways to deal with the fact we have aging pipes and mains, and it means we lose water every single day. And we've been talking with the State Senator Ed Charbonneau, a Republican from Valparaiso, about this topic. And thank you very much for being with us to talk about today.
Thank you, Chris.